Dear Sugar is supported by
So, hey, Cheryl.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, so I've got a question for you on Dear Sugar Radio. Who's your best friend growing up? We're going to talk about best friends. We have a letter, an awesome, interesting, complicated letter about best friends.
Right.
But who was your best friend growing up?
Well, I had different best friends throughout my childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I moved around a bit. And so, you know, I had my best friend in elementary school, actually sort of elementary into middle school. And then I went off to high school and I had a number of them, so different girls that I was close to at different times.
Did you ever settle on one that was kind of your big archetypal best friend?
You know, I never was that kind of person. Even to this day in my life, I've never been one to say, you are my best friend. I have a wonderful circle of really great friends. And my girlfriends do tend to be like sisters to me. And they're so important to me. What about you?
Well, I ask the question because I think there is a certain intensity. There is this role, the best friend.
Yeah.
And it starts from when you're in elementary school where it's kind of totemic and like, who's your best friend? And there's an overt discussion of it because it really matters. That's the sibling you chose. And the catch, of course, as we're going to find out in this letter, is that your best friend is like a sibling and there's all that complication, right? And for me, it's a very familiar archetype because I've got that twin loss.
Yeah.
So I'm always looking for that bestie. And increasingly, I found that my relationships with them, whether it was Brian Danforth in elementary school or Robert Perez in high school or Eric Larson in college, it was fraught because I brought all of my stuff to that relationship. I put a lot of eggs in that particular basket, and too many, in fact.
Right.
But I'm fascinated by this idea of the best friend, and I want to read you this letter that's a best friend letter. And then we get to talk to Ann Patchett, which is every kind of awesome, because she writes so beautifully about everything but friendship in particular. So here's the letter.
Okay.
Dear Sugar, my best friend is getting married in a couple of months, and I'm having misgivings about her decision to get married right now to this person. I know that it doesn't really matter how I feel who she marries. It's her life and her decision, but I feel like a terrible best friend for not being able to fully support her during such an important time, and I don't know if I should express my concerns or stay silent. She has been my best friend since we were little kids, and since our families grew up together, we have grown to be as much like sisters as friends as we've navigated school, college, first jobs, boyfriends, and life together over the last 15 years. We're both in our mid-20s now, and we live on opposite sides of the country. We're also very different people. My best friend is a gorgeous athlete who has always had boys more or less throwing themselves at her. She struggles with introspection and in knowing what she wants. She sometimes suppresses her feelings. She's spontaneous and occasionally makes sudden and rash decisions. I've never really dated casually. I got married last year to my college sweetheart, whom I dated for 5 years long distance before getting engaged. I am a person who likes to plan and prepare for things. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I'm constantly evaluating my feelings and choices. I've struggled over the years with jealousy towards her athletic ability and ease with men, but I love her with all my heart, and I know she loves me too. We've gone through many cycles of drifting apart and being close in our friendship, but she's always been my best friend through it all. She was the maid of honor at my wedding last year, and I will be hers. I'm nervous about her wedding for a couple of reasons. The first is that she started dating this guy only 6 months ago. The second is that she has a history of abruptly ending relationships. At the time she became involved with her current fiancé, she'd just ended a serious relationship. She was pretty much living with the last guy a year ago, and then their relationship exploded into an unhealthy mess. She claims he became emotionally abusive, and so she suddenly broke up with him. And then he verged on stalking her for a while after she moved out. Prior to that, she was engaged to someone else, but called off their engagement a few months before the wedding. Before that, she broke half a dozen guys' hearts by suddenly dumping them for a variety of reasons. Her current fiancé seems nice, though I've never met him in person, but all of her boyfriends seem nice, up until that moment when she finds their fatal flaw a few months in and calls it off. She reminds me of Julia Roberts from Runaway Bride. I still haven't bought my airline tickets to the wedding because I fear she's going to call it off again. She says everything is perfect in their relationship and that she knows this is the right thing, and I want to believe her so much, but it's hard because I have heard all of this from her before. I'm trying to give her the benefit of the doubt that she will go through with the wedding as planned. I can see how she has a better perspective and clearer thought patterns than the last time she was engaged a couple of years ago, but I'm still plagued by doubt. Can you see why I feel like such a terrible friend? Even if she does get married as planned, I have concerns. As a veteran of a long, difficult, long-distance relationship myself, I am concerned that she has never had the experience of struggling through hard times with her significant other and has never given herself the time to develop the deep partnership that is, in my opinion, essential to a good marriage. Again, I realize that this is my opinion based on my experiences, but I don't see how the first 6 months of dating someone can even skim the surface on their character and the real workings of the relationship. I wish she could be as certain of her vows on her wedding day as I was on mine. If she thinks that they have what it takes to last forever, why are they rushing to get married? I want to accept her way of thinking and not be judgmental, but obviously that's not working out so well for me right now. So, Sugars, what would you do if this was your best friend or your sister? Am I doing the right thing by putting on a smiling face and giving my best effort to be supportive in spite of my doubts? Or should I try to confront her somehow? What is the right thing to do? Sincerely, worst best friend.
Oh,
that's why I was asking you about a bestie, you know?
Worst best friend. So many friends have not obeyed my wishes for the ways that I think that they should live their lives.
Exactly. And that's really why their lives are in chaos.
Exactly.
They're not listening to the program.
I mean, we are Sugars, damn it. But no, I mean, this is such a great question, worst best friend. And you have my sympathy. I mean, I think we all know that feeling of watching a friend make what we fear is going to be a mistake or repeat a pattern over and over again that they themselves either don't see or they can see, but they're not willing to change it. It's right. Very, very frustrating. And yeah. you know, you're asking a great question.
Yeah, which,
what to do.
Which is part of our way of saying we don't really know the answer yet, but we're going to talk our way through it. One thing I will say is, you know, undercurrent of the letter that isn't stated but is actually quite clear in particular places is they have a very competitive relationship. And our letter writer, worst best friend, you, and you're quite open about it, to your credit, you're in some ways jealous of this person. But you guys have used one another to some extent. You certainly use her as a kind of measuring stick. And it's important to realize that, because the real question underneath this is, do I have a kind of moral duty if I think I know this person a little better than she knows herself? Mm-hmm. And that's a good, honest question that you can wrestle with, and maybe we can help you wrestle with. But there might be other dynamics that getting yourself this deeply involved in her ruminations or her decisions, life decisions, invoke some of your own feelings around her. And I guess what I mean is, getting very concerned about whether she's making a good decision or a bad decision does in a certain way allow you to feel superior to her. Mm-hmm. You say quite overtly, I wish she could feel the same assurance on her wedding day that I felt on mine. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. That's a good loving impulse, but there's also a kind of competitive comparing there. And especially if this is somebody who in some ways has led this life that you wouldn't necessarily want for yourself, but you admit that you're jealous of her athletic ability, of her ease with men, maybe of the fact that she doesn't have the burden of introspection, that she's able to make decisions that aren't totally overdetermined, that she doesn't anguish so much over things. Now, on the other side of that, Cheryl, is that it sounds like some of those decisions are bad ones.
Yeah.
And that this best friend does really recognize that her good friend could be setting herself up. But what's interesting to me is that her obsession with it is kind of playing out unspoken competitiveness between them that I think has probably been there for a long time.
Well, yeah, and a real sense of being judgmental, which worst best friend fully admits to. You know, when we judge people, it's often, you know, almost always tells us a lot about ourselves rather than just about the other person. And she even uses the word, she's a veteran of a long relationship, a long distance relationship, a relationship that has, you know, obviously contained some struggle. You know, she's married. She is really settled in a way that it sounds like this friend isn't.
Yeah.
And that can be a really, you know, that these two women have such opposite experiences when it comes to their romantic lives.
Mm-hmm.
There is both a sense of judgmentalism and jealousy. I think you're right to put your finger on that. But at heart, I think that worst best friend really is genuinely concerned about her friend.
And has reason to be.
Yeah. So let's first, like, I mean, maybe the way to sort of wade into this is first just, like, let's acknowledge this big giant box over here that is your judgment,
right,
worst best friend, that is your jealousy, and that is that innate sense that many, I would say maybe all of us have, that our way is the right way.
Right. What you were saying, I tell my friends what to do and they don't listen.
Exactly. Right. I absolutely feel that way. And I know I'm also the recipient of this. I've been the recipient of this as a friend. I'm quite sure that countless times my friends have had conversations about me behind my back where they critique all the things I'm not doing.
Yeah. I'm almost, whenever we're not in the studio, that's what I'm doing.
It's weird. Yeah. You're just gossiping about me.
Yeah. It's just Cheryl's pathologies.
So, I think that piece of it really shouldn't have much of a bearing on, this course of action we're going to propose, because this is what Worst Best Friend asks us.
Right.
What should I do?
Right.
I have these feelings. So we all have these judgmental feelings of the people we love, put those aside. They really aren't about your friend. They're about you.
Right.
But how do we, when we see a pattern in somebody we love, how do we talk to them about it without alienating them, hurting them, or really sort of imposing our own opinion of their lives, in ways that are really inappropriate?
Right. And there's a verb right at the end here that's a signal of what you shouldn't do if you are going to bring this up. And she says, should I try to confront her somehow?
Yeah. No confrontation.
Confrontation is not going to be very effective in this case.
But conversation can be.
Right. And I'm surprised, honestly, when I read the letter and especially upon rereading it, if they're this close, why hasn't this best friend had a heart-to-heart with her?
Mm-hmm.
And why haven't they talked deeply? I mean, it seems to me that one of the benefits of having a best friend who does know your whole history is you get like somebody who knows your stuff. So to me, the pity is that the best friend isn't saying, well, I know this seems crazy, but I need to explain to you, even given my history, because you've been through it all with me, why I'm making this decision right now. The fact that they don't seem to even have had that discussion and she hasn't even met the guy, to me, is kind of a signal that maybe she doesn't want to have a discussion about that because she knows that her best friend might tell her something that would complicate that decision.
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think that a conversation is in order. But one phrase that I learned many years ago when I was working with teenage girls in a program where I was meant to be their kind of mentor and advocate, their youth advocate, is unconditional positive regard. And what that is really a consciousness of separating your own judgment from that conversation you're having with this person. To say to this person, I don't agree with every choice you've made. I don't agree with all of your opinions on the world and your life and my life. But I do hold you in unconditional positive regard.
Right.
So if you begin from that place, so Worst Best Friend, if you begin from the place with your friend where you say, I love you, I trust you, I'm happy for you that you want to marry this man, and I absolutely want to be there and support you.
And be your maid of honor.
And be your maid
Stand
of honor.
Stand by you, yeah.
And I also want to talk to you about the whirlwind nature of this and the way that you've been down this road before with other men. And I'm just worried. Right. What do you think?
I'm worried.
And oftentimes when you just ask a question,
yeah,
is this relationship different from those other relationships you had that didn't end so well?
Right.
And what you're doing there is you're opening rather than shutting down by saying, you shouldn't do this, or I think this is wrong.
Right.
I think it's a disaster.
Yeah.
Nobody ever gets anywhere when they feel judged. That will shut us down more quickly, I think, than anything.
I think the ultimate thing that she has to carry into that conversation, in addition to putting aside her own judgment, is to say, it is her life, and she isn't me. And she has every right to walk to that altar with whatever hopes and honest hopes and good, careful thinking and gut instinct and also delusions and bad patterns. That's actually her right. And I can't rescue her, but I could be there to talk with her a little bit about it and at least to express worry, as you say, concern. That's very different than confront.
Right. I think it's also important to remember, not to get too freaked out about people making mistakes. We all make mistakes and we learn from them.
This is a big one.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a big one, but here's the deal.
And it might not be a mistake.
How do any of us ever know, when we get married or when our friends get married, that it's going to work out well? I mean, we could sit around all day, Steve, and just exchange stories that we have of, relationships we thought wouldn't work and didn't, and relationships we thought wouldn't work and did, and on and on and on.
You're absolutely right.
So I do think, and any number of things. I mean, I've had friends, I can think of just in recent history over the last few years that made decisions that my opinion was that it's a mistake.
Right.
That I had an opinion where if it were up to me, which button would I have pressed? I would have pressed the other button than the one that my friend pressed, right? Okay.
Right.
And it's okay in the end.
Right.
And sometimes I was wrong. My opinion was wrong. And sometimes theirs was, but it's not the end of the world.
Right.
You know?
But the question before us is really, worst best friend, do I have a kind of duty to my best friend status in a way to broach this subject? And, you know, my answer on that has to do with the regret if you don't.
Yeah.
Because you're absolutely right that people lead their own lives. And ultimately, she has to recognize, hey, my best friend's going to walk to the altar in a very different way than I did because she's not me. That's abundantly clear in lots of different ways. But will I feel regret? Will I feel that I withheld? And this is why I was asking you earlier about best friend, because there's a certain status there. It carries a certain duty, even on the playground. That's mm-hmm. my best friend. So there's a kind of special responsibility there to be there when it's most difficult and, you know, sometimes when it might be upsetting in a way that another person might not say something to
right.
her. You know, maybe even a sister wouldn't say something to her. And best friends are there to say, hey, remember that? That's a red flag for you.
Yeah, I think part of the job of being, whether you call it a best friend or a really good friend, mm-hmm. is to call people on their shit. You know, I want my friends to be honest with me. I want them to be kind to me.
Right.
I want them to let me make my own choices and still love me through them, to have unconditional positive regard. But I do want them to be honest when they see that I've gotten off track or that I'm making a decision that maybe isn't so great for me. I want them to tell me. And that's also the sign to me that I actually have an intimacy. You know, we have to be vulnerable and take risks and be honest with the people who are truly close to us.
Mm-hmm.
And so worst best friend, I really think you should say something.
Yeah.
I also think we have a fantastic guest who might be able to offer us some deeper insight into this question.
Absolutely. And I can say that we are both just like thrilled to have Anne Patchett. We're going to give her a call in a sec. And we're specifically interested in hearing from her because we're both huge fans of her beautiful novels, Bel Canto, Sense of Enchantment, all of her beautiful books. But especially we thought of her in relation to this question because of her wonderful memoir, Truth and Beauty, which details an intensely charged best friend relationship with a wonderful writer, the late Lucy Greeley. And I think that was the reason that immediately leapt to our minds.
Right.
We need to get Anne Patchett's brain and heart on this. So let's give her a call.
Let's do it.
Hello.
Hi, Anne Patchett.
Yes.
It's Steve Almond. How are you?
Steve Almond. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm here with Cheryl Strayed, and we are utterly thrilled to be on the phone with you.
Hi, Anne.
Hi, Cheryl Strayed. It's so nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you, too. I'm so sad that we've not yet met in person. I've met you on the page and fallen in love with you many times.
Likewise. But I was talking to Liz Gilbert yesterday, and she sends her love to you both.
Aww.
Oh, that's sweet. She just sent me an email saying, say hi to Anne when you have her on. You know, Liz has been a guest on Dear Sugar Radio. She's fantastic, of course. And we're really excited to talk to you about this letter from Worst Best Friend. Have you read the letter?
Yeah.
Well, let's just take the direct route. What would you counsel poor Worst Best Friend?
You know, it's funny because I've been thinking about the time I really thought somebody should not get married. My sister was engaged to someone who was absolutely not the right person.
Wow.
And I did everything I could possibly do to prevent their marriage.
Wow, what did that include?
To great expense of our relationship. And I also had the experience of a friend whose fiance made an enormous pass at me the night before the wedding. And I said nothing at all because she knew who he was. He was who he was, and she knew who he was, and I felt no compunction to try to call that off. So I've been involved on both sides of this.
Yes, you have.
Reading this letter, though, I would say if you don't know the guy, it's not the wedding you're trying to call off.
Right.
It's her personality you're trying to call off.
Oh, wow.
And that you cannot do.
Yeah.
To call off a wedding because you think that your friend doesn't make a good job making choices and decisions, I don't think you can do that.
Well, but what about having a conversation with her?
I'm all in favor of having a conversation with everybody, you know, and to say, I love you, and boy, based on past experience and how your stock has performed under similar economic duress, you know, I'm concerned about this.
Right.
But I would imagine if she's planning on marrying him, she's going to tell you to go pound sand. And I also think it's so important to remember that what makes me happy,
right,
which is stability and a lack of drama, is not necessarily what makes my best friend happy. And if this is really about happiness and not necessarily about marriage, then maybe this particular drama of almost going through with it and not going through with it is her friend's joy. And if that's her friend's joy and she wants to stay her friend, then maybe she accepts it until the point where it becomes too exhausting and then she backs out of the friendship.
Well, it's interesting because then the question becomes, I mean, Ann Patchett is bringing it in terms of just being very blunt. Then the question becomes, does the letter writer, and this is part of what we talked about a little bit before we got on the phone, that she seems competitive with her friend and in certain ways looks down on her a bit.
Right.
And, you know, she's runaway
Isn't
bride.
That delicious? She's,
right. Well, my question is the larger sort of hovering question here, am I really this person's best friend or should I be or do I want to be?
Well, sure. And those things that are so historic, it's really hard to know. We, you know, we make these friends when we're young and we love them. We love our history together. We love our memories of them.
Right.
They may not be the person that we're suited to at this point in life, and they may not be suited to us. We may not be able to help them, but it's really, really hard. I think that when you're in a romantic relationship with someone and those things fall apart, we know what to call it. We call it breaking up. We call it a divorce.
Right.
We know this person doesn't suit our needs anymore, and they hurt us. But I think in a friendship, friendships are very hard to end. Because it's murky and they're on the other side of the country, we're not together all the time. You want to keep helping that person that you loved when you were in college. You might not be helping them anymore. But I do think that you're exactly right to talk about that. Not say, gee, I don't think you should marry Bob. But say, you know, gee, I see this cycle repeated all over the place. This cycle that you may really enjoy that makes me uncomfortable.
Right.
I see it repeated all over the place. And can we talk about that?
Yeah. And tone is everything. I think we can sometimes have the heaviest, deepest conversations when we take a really light hand and talk with a light heart. You know, I do think that we can get over invested in the mistakes our friends make, or at least our perceptions of their actions being mistakes. It becomes almost like this projection. In some cases, I've seen it become almost an obsession. Like, she cannot marry that man. It will be a vast mistake. And I mean, I think that the worst best friend really does need to remember that, you know, at the end of the day, at least for her as a friend, the stakes aren't as high as maybe she fears they're going to be. Obviously, it's a big deal to choose the right person to marry. But I think that she needs to divest herself of the idea that she's going to be a prime player and whether that happens or not.
Yeah,
I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think that once we can accept the fact that there are very, very few cases in which we can really change the course of someone's life.
Mm-hmm.
I know you were talking about my friendship with Lucy Greeley before,
and, right.
And I think it was after Lucy died that I really realized that, you know, in a sense it was written. She was on her journey that had started in her childhood, and the question was not whether or not I could affect it or change it. The question was whether or not I could bear witness to it.
Huh.
And keep loving her and keep my eyes open and say, I see you on this hard journey that you're making that I can't change. And I think that if worst best friend really loves her friend and can say, you know, that looks like a hard path you're on, but I can't change it, but I can love you through it.
Yeah.
That's pretty great.
I think that's a great expression of what friendship is. I think we bear witness to each other's lives, to the good times and the bad times and the mistakes and the triumphs. And it's really about being as loving and kind and honest as we can bear to be at any given moment.
I think that's absolutely true. You know, people aren't tapestries, and you don't get to pull out the threads you don't like. And if you do, everything falls apart.
Right. I keep trying to do that, but, you know, it never works out.
But it's a fine line between, yes, I want to help you. And, you know, and I go back to the story with my sister, and I called my sister the other night. And I said, can I talk about this time that you almost married this crazy person? And I would have done anything. I mean, really, short of killing her, I would have done anything to keep her from marrying this guy because I knew he was such a bad guy. But I think that those kinds of black and white situations present themselves pretty rarely.
What happened?
Yeah, what did you do? We're dying
and
to,
did she,
to know.
Yeah, did you have an impact on this, or did she decide?
She was just marrying this guy who was so obviously a bad man with a lot of secrets. And my sister and I had a strained relationship back in those days, although we're extremely close now. And this was actually the turning point. And I used to say to her, she was so mad at me. She hated me so much. And I would say to her, you are on the tracks. The train is coming.
Wow.
I don't care if you hate me for the rest of your life. I am going to get you off the tracks. I would rather have you hate me than have you hit by this train.
Wow.
And we would fight and fight and scream and fight. And then one day his wife showed up in her office and said, I hear you're marrying my husband next week.
So it was the wife that ended it.
Yeah, yeah. Ann Patchett was completely
useless. My sister didn't
useless.
Ever actually listen to me.
The wife of the man you're about to marry is an awfully convincing figure, yeah. It turns out.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. Yes, listen to that word, best friend. That's what
right.
you need. When the wife of the man your best friend is about to marry shows up, then you have a real case.
Yeah. It's tough, man. She hasn't even met this guy, so she can't even make that judgment.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
is he a
That's
train
exactly
or a chair?
Right. And you know, the fact is, people who have screwed up a million times sometimes really meet the right guy. I mean, I'm all about hope in those situations, so he might be terrific.
Absolutely. All kinds of wonderful, grand loves have been born out of chaos and doom and confusion.
And bad stock forecasts.
Exactly. No, really. They yeah. they have been. Absolutely. I wrote about it in one of my Dear Sugar columns. It's called Dudes in the Woods. I actually wrote about one of my best friends was, you know, dating all these different guys and in and out of different things. And she met this one guy and a few months later announced that they were going to get married.
And I was like, don't do it.
I was nervous because it was so fast and it was so new. And, you know, she married him and it turns out he's an incredibly wonderful person and they have a beautiful, happy marriage, you
right.
know. And it was a conversation we had. I don't know. Are you doing the right thing? You know, and sometimes actually your friends are doing the right thing and you're the one who's wrong.
I remember once when I was teaching in an MFA program, I had two students at the end of their two-year course decide that they were going to get married. They not only didn't seem particularly right for one another, they were both wanting to be fiction writers. They were incredibly poor. They had no idea what they were going to do with their lives. And I sat them down and was like, look, guys, you're graduating, you don't have jobs, you don't know what the future is going to bring, you want something to be settled, and so you want to get married, just to have something to kind of clutch onto at this moment. This just isn't the right moment. Give it some time, get some jobs, find out if life's going to work out for you. You're still going to be there for each other, you can still get married. They said, thank you very much. They went off, they got married. It was like 20 years ago, their kids are grown. They're so
wow.
happy.
Once again, Ann Patchett just as a yenta, she just
well,
comes
yeah.
in there and just utterly fails. Right
well,
motive,
that's
wrong outcome.
I was just yeah, we're establishing that Ann has a long history of being
yeah,
a naysayer when it comes
right.
to love.
That's right. But sometimes she's right about it.
If you guys need any advice after the show, feel free to call me back. You've got my
okay.
number.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been really fun talking to you, and thanks for sharing your insight into this interesting letter.
It was a lot of fun.
Thanks so much, Ann.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Take care. I mean, she somewhat like Mary Carr, it's just like, bam, you're going to get it.
Yeah.
And she zeroed in right on what we were tiptoeing around, which is this friend feels all sorts of really ambivalent feelings about her best friend. And that's
right.
Part of what she feels guilty about that makes her say, I'm the worst best friend, you know, and they go about things very differently. And friendship is not possession. You know, you have to release people to their fate. But I think I also feel like, and Anne is an exemplar here, you speak your mind if you're genuinely concerned. And you don't say it because you, you know, have the right to change the course or the expectation that they can change the course of somebody's life. Maybe it won't work. But in a certain way, those two young kids who came to her, in a certain way, she presented a test to them, a reality test. Somebody who I'm sure they held in great esteem, who was speaking quite sensibly and honestly and offering them good counsel that made a lot of sense as she was talking to us about it. You know, that's something they probably took in and had to think about and talk about. It was a kind of test.
Mm-hmm.
So it might have had something to do with the fact that they needed to be sure they were serious about making this decision in the face of some doubt, some reasonable doubt.
That's right. And we never know. We never know. Most of us, when we decide to get married, mm-hmm. we convince ourselves that we know what we're doing. And sometimes we're right about that, and sometimes we're wrong about that.
Yeah.
And I thought the most important point that Anne made, and I hope, worst best friend, that you really think about this, is, you know, that you're not hoping to have a conversation about perhaps ending an engagement or delaying a wedding, but rather talking honestly with your friend about who she is.
Yes.
And what she wants, and what the recent events of her romantic life, how they've shaped her entry into this new relationship and this engagement.
Yeah.
And so we're talking about, you know, that's a different conversation. You're not trying to persuade someone to, you know, do what you want them to do,
right.
But you're rather hoping to help them illuminate their own life.
Yeah, and in a certain way, I guess we could say, worst best friend, what your letter is really about is your friendship. It might be also that you're concerned that she's going to get married, but underneath that is a lot of anxiety about the way that you guys go about things differently and the parts of you that don't see eye to eye and in which you have trouble understanding her, but also your deep love and desire to remain close to her and in her life, having battled through a lot of these cycles of drifting apart and then coming together. So maybe the conversation needs to be a broader conversation about your love for her and your desire to make sure that you remain friends. And, you know, even if you want to present to her, you know, some doubts or concerns about whether this is a good decision, the larger thing is, I'm your best friend.
I'm your best friend, and I will bear witness to your life.
That's right.
Steve Almond, I will continue bearing witness to your life.
And it will be so sad and comical. But I'm glad that you're there over there on the couch looking beautiful and radiant as always and just laughing hysterically inside. I want to read one more thing, and it's an Ann Patchett quote. I want to sort of hold it out there as what we wish for friendship. It isn't always this, but I think it's from Truth and Beauty, and it's about her relationship with Lucy Greeley, which is a complicated, very fraught, tragic relationship in some ways. But the way she writes about what it can be and what it is in its best moments, I think would be a nice note to end on. So this is from this beautiful memoir that we've heaped so much worthy praise on, Truth and Beauty. And this is what Ann Patchett has to say, and it's very clear we should be listening. Our friendship, her friendship with Lucy Greeley, was like our writing in some ways. It was the only thing that was interesting about our otherwise dull lives. We were better off when we were together. Together we were a small society of ambition and high ideals. We were tender and patient and kind. We were not like the world at all.
Oh, that's so beautiful.
And I, you know, that's what we all want.
And, you know, I didn't think of this until you just read that. But worst best friend is in her 20s, as is her best friend. Anne Patchett is writing about Lucy Greeley when they're in their 20s. And I will say the most intense friendship of my life by far was when I was in my 20s.
Mm-hmm.
It was a woman I met when I was 23. And there is something very powerful about that era of friendship, because you're finally an adult and you're having adult relationships, adult friendships that are different from the friendships you have as a teenager.
Yep.
And sometimes that intensity is great and it connects you more deeply. Sometimes it can be a little bit too much.
Yeah.
a little over the top.
Yeah.
You know, you need to kind of give your friend some distance and space sometimes. And maybe that's a little word of wisdom, too, that we can share with Worst Best Friend. Is part of being a good friend is being honest and stepping into the situation and having those conversations that are difficult. The other half of it is stepping back, letting people have their lives, saying, I love you no matter what you do. I'm here for you.
Right. I can't change it, but I can bear witness to it. All right. Well, we wish you every kind of good luck. Write us and tell us how it turns out. Dear Sugar Radio is produced by our best friends at WBUR. We are produced and edited by our complete and total bestie,
Lisa Tobin.
That's right, Tobin of the Lisas. We're recording at Cybersound in Boston, and we give our thanks to Perry Geyer and Justin Sheriff for their help. And please send your letters to DearSugarRadio@gmail.com. Letters of any sort. They could be about best friend crises. They could be about romance. They could be about family, death, love, taxes, sex, whatever is on your mind and heart. And please listen and subscribe on iTunes.